Today, home lending booms, but what have they got to hide? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance and the List is one that is posts covering finance and property news. The ABS released their monthly lending indicators and it showed a strong uptick in new mortgage loans in contrast to poor household spending trends and also lower confidence levels overall. Although, as we will see, there are questions about some of these data sets. Significantly, we also note that the ABS is about to terminate its monthly reporting of new loans data, saying the monthly lending indicator publication will transition to a quarterly release. So the final monthly publication will be in the September reference period of 2024, released 1 November 2024. And the first quarterly publication will be on the December quarter 2024 to be released in February 2025. Their excuse is that the ABS reviews and makes changes to its forward work plan to ensure it continues to appropriately measure the Australian economy, environment and society while balancing ongoing budget pressures and the requirement to modernise operations. Now, my observation is rather different because the monitoring of new loans for housing is an essential barometer for the economy. Without the monthly data, it'll be easier for lenders to continue their push to reduce lending standards, something evidently being supported by the opposition party too, by the way, and so drive home prices even higher. The only monthly data will come from the RBA on gross loans and from APRA, again, on gross loans for ADIs, while APRA does provide some additional detailed data delayed every 3 months. This switch to quarterly data from the ABS is, in my view, plain wrong. Having got that out of the way, now let's look at what they reported. In August 2024, the ABS said that new housing loans rose 1% to $30.4 billion. That's after a rise of 3.5% in July, and it's 23% higher compared to a year ago. Yes, 23% higher at a time when households are under extreme financial pressure. Within that, owner-occupied housing rose 0.7% to $18.7 billion, and that is 16.8% higher compared to a year ago, while investor housing rose 1.4% to $11.7 billion and is, wait for it, 34.2% higher compared to a year ago. The value of new loan commencements for the purchase of existing dwellings rose 0.5% to 17.5% higher compared to a year ago. And for the construction of new dwellings, it rose 1.6% and was 13.1% higher compared to a year ago. And for the purchase of new dwellings, it fell 4.1%, but is still 12.3% higher compared to a year ago. And in August 2024, for owner-occupier housing, the value of new loan commitments in Queensland rose 2.6%. In South Australia, it rose 2.1%. In Western Australia, it rose 0.5%. In the Northern Territories, it rose 7.8%. In Tasmania, it rose 1.9%. And the ACT, it rose 1.3%. While in Victoria, it fell 1.8%. And in New South Wales, it fell 1.4%. The Tasmanian, Northern Territory, and ACT Territory series, of course, are smaller and therefore more volatile. In August 2024, in season-adjusted terms for investor housing, the value of new loan commitments in Queensland rose 7.9%, in South Australia it rose 5.1%, and the ACT rose 0.4%. In Western Australia, though, it fell 8.3%. In Victoria, it fell 2.7%. In Tasmania, it was down 9.1%, and in the Northern Territory, it was down 8.1%, while New South Wales remained unchanged from the previous month. And again, the Tasmanian, Northern Territory, and Australian Capital Territory series are smaller and typically more volatile. So all up, the total value of lending for housing in Queensland rose by just over 40% in the past 12 months. This $2 billion rise was more than any other state. And this is one of the main reasons why home prices in Queensland have been so strong, because there is a causal relationship between credit lent and home price growth. Turning to refinancing, in August 2024, in season-adjusted terms, the value of external refinancing for total housing fell 3.1% to $16.1 billion, and there's 18.6% lower compared to a year ago. And within that, loans for owner-occupied housing fell 3.8% to $10 billion and was 25.1% lower compared to a year ago, while investor housing refinancing fell 1.8% to $6 billion and was 4.8% lower compared to a year ago. Of course, many people have already refinanced and rates are still high. The bulk of new lending was for variable rate loans. No surprise there, given the expectations of lower rates ahead, eventually, when the RBA starts to cut, although probably later than many expect. The average loan size is still extended relative to incomes, although in August 2024, in original terms, average loan sizes for owner-occupied dwellings, that's including construction, the purchase of new dwellings and existing dwellings, fell 0.7% at the national level from $641,000 to $636,000. Now, turning to first-time buyers, they're not enduring the lending fest at all. In August 2024, in season-adjusted terms for owner-occupier first home buyers, the number of new loan commitments at the national level fell 1.5% to 9,869. That was after a 0.6% rise in July. That said, it's still 9.2% higher compared to a year ago. In Victoria, first-time buyer loans fell 5.2%. In New South Wales, they fell 3.7%. And in the ACT, they fell 5.9%. Although, in South Australia, they rose 4.6%. In Western Australia, they were up 1.8%. In Queensland, they rose 1%. And in Tasmania, they rose 7.4%. And in the Northern Territory, they rose 1.9%. So, credit for home lending, especially investors, is booming. Now, it's worth recalling here that the RBA has recently warned that falling interest rates could trigger a property price boom that encourages households to take on too much debt. Historically, periods of low and or falling interest rates have coincided with borrowers taking on higher levels of debt, and in some cases, lenders extending credit to riskier borrowers, the RBA said. Over the past two decades, the international experience has shown that assets that are heavily reliant on debt funding, such as property, can also see unsustainable price rises, increasing the risk of a subsequent market correction that could deplete household equity buffers and result in broader economic disruption. Shane Oliver from AMP notes that history tells us the RBA should be wary because there's been a long history of rates coming down and the property market pushing higher. This time around, it would occur from a backdrop of record prices. So if it's going to occur, it will entail a sharp pickup in household borrowing. Now, as you know, my surveys highlight some households are under extreme financial pressure already. And in fact, I'll be discussing this in my live show next Tuesday. So official data on household spending is also an important indicator. So conveniently, the ABS also released household spending data for August today. However, I have issues with these figures too. They are derived using bank transaction data, supermarket transaction data, and new vehicle sales data, and only covers some categories of spend. The de-identified data is received at different frequencies, daily, weekly, or monthly. And in fact, all participating banks provide data at an identifiable state and territory level. But it's worth noting the source data doesn't cover the whole population. And in the case of bank data, it does not include all payment types. While cash payments, direct transfers outside the banks, cryptocurrency and BPAY transactions are all forms of household spending, they're not currently included due to lack of available data sources or the ability to identify such transactions in the current data set. And there are potential areas of both undercoverage and overcoverage. For example, not all Australian resident households are represented within the supplied bank data, resulting in undercoverage of the population. Additionally, not all payment types are captured in the bank data, such as cash payments. There's also potential overcoverage as individuals may use their personal bank cards for business-related purchases. Instances of over or under coverage can introduce bias and variance in the estimates. Monthly and quarterly series are produced for total household spending and nine of the major divisions. So that includes food, alcoholic beverages and tobacco, clothing and footwear, furnishing and household equipment, health, transport, recreation and culture, hotels, cafes and restaurants, and miscellaneous goods and services, excluding insurance and other financial services. But most importantly, this data excludes rent and other dwelling services, electricity, gas and other fuels, communication services, education services and insurance, and other financial services. In other words, the spending data is partial at best and is incomplete and excludes more than half of a typical mortgage or renting household. Anyhow, Those partial numbers report that household spending was unchanged in August, according to seasonally adjusted figures. They say growth in household spending has stalled at the start of the financial year, even as the federal government's stage three tax cuts come into effect on 1 July. The flat result in August followed revised falls of 0.5% in July and 0.1% in June. In trend terms, spending fell for the second consecutive month and was down 0.1% in August. In August, spending on services rose 0.4%, growing for the second month in a row. The rise was led by higher spending on air travel, hotel accommodation, dining out, the ABS said. Growth was offset by a 0.3% fall in spending on goods, as households spent less on new vehicles and automotive fuel. Household spending rose in most states and territories compared to the same time last year in calendar-adjusted terms. The largest percentage rise was seen in Western Australia, up 3.9%, Queensland at 2.7%, and the Northern Territory up 1.9%, while Victoria and Tasmania fell 0.3%. And in seasonally adjusted current price terms, discretionary spending rose 0.2% month on month, driven by increased spending on goods for recreation and culture, clothing and footwear, and air passenger and sea transport. In seasonally adjusted terms, non-discretionary spending fell 0.4% month on month, driven by decreased spending on motoring goods and food. And remember, this is gross data, taking into account the roughly 1 million additional people who came into the country over the last couple of years. So this masks the true per capita cuts that many are experiencing. So all up, the spending indicators are not really that meaningful. Yet the ABS will enhance the monthly household spending indicators and cease the retail trade publications after the June 2025 reference period. On the other hand, the data on lending will only be released four times a year. So this is another example of data not fit for purpose, in my opinion, and I assume the financial pressures at the ABS has caused this, but it does beg the question, what have they got to hide and who is pulling their strings? Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultant standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.